Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports. Joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, NWSL analyst and broadcaster. On today's episode, we have a United States women's national team versus Australia recap. Two matches to get through and our reactions to both of those. But before we get into all that, a quick reminder to follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. You can also head on over to our YouTube page and hit subscribe to never miss a new video, interview, or whenever we go live. Plus, you can catch great extended NWSL highlights and more over at youtube.com/attackingthird. A little bit of a holiday break. How are you doing, Lisa? It's great to be back with you.
It is great to be back. Yeah, a little bit of a break for us. It didn't stop, though, of course, lots of soccer to be watched. My Philadelphia Union, they are on a roll right now. They are headed to their first ever Eastern Conference Finals, which is huge. That semifinal match was insane. Penalty kicks, Andre Blake, superstar. I have to plug, you're always plugging Chicago and your home sides. I've got to do it. The Union are arguably one of the best sports teams in Philadelphia, and they are slept on time and time again, and they make it to the playoffs. So this is like their fourth straight year. Now they're headed to the Eastern Conference Finals. Go Union, Duke.
I love it. You better tell the people, Lisa. You better let them know. I love that. I love when you bring that energy. But soccer and but football and also American football, watch a lot of that while eating some turkey. And we got a little bit of news before we get into our episode about American football. Right, Lisa?
We do. Some American football. It's next Sunday. It's NFL on CBS doubleheader with early action featuring Justin Herbert leading the Chargers against the Bengals. And then my Eagles, they're on the road against the Jets. Then one of the hardest hitting rivalries in football is renewed when the Ravens head to Pittsburgh for a meeting with the Steelers. It all begins at noon Eastern with the NFL Today. NFL doubleheader action this Sunday on CBS. You got to check it out. CBS, they have it all. The American football, the football.
And that's what we're going to focus on right now. We had an international window to take a look at. A lot of teams in action over the last week or so, but we're going to focus on the United States women's national team in this one. They traveled to Australia. We did a preview of these two games. We talked a little bit about the roster when it broke initially. We were really excited to sort of see this collection of players head on over to Australia to take on the Matildas in a two-game series. It was the first games for the United States in Australia since the 2000 Olympic Summer Games, so 21 years ago, and also the first time for United States to travel to face Australia in Australia since the announcement of Australia becoming one of the co-hosts of the soon-to-be 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup. So these two matches taking place on Friday, November 26th, and then on November 30th. United States walking away undefeated in these two. The first game there, there was a 3-0 win over the Matildas with the goals from Ashley Hatch, Rose Lavelle, and Lindsay Horan. And the second game ended in a 1-1 one draw, with Ashley Hatch being the lone scorer in that one for the United States as well, and Kaya Saman getting that equalizer late in the game for Australia. So going into both these games, we're going to be talking about them collectively and sort of what our takeaways were from these two matches, just because of the very tough timestamp that we're on these two matches. We knew that we couldn't do our traditional immediate live recaps that we have been doing for so many of our listeners post United States women's national team games. So we're taking a little bit of a different twist on this one. And I'm glad that we're doing that for these two games, Lisa, because let's take it back a little bit. A lot of the things that we talked about heading into these two games was the fact that there were so many new faces heading into this international window to compete for the United States women's national team, that it was the conclusion of that sort of exhibition post-Olympic tour for the Tokyo Olympians who came home with the bronze medal, and maybe the start of something new and looking ahead for preparations for that 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup. And this roster was broken down into about a dozen or so of those Olympians, and then filled to the brim with newer additions to this roster, several players having fewer, 10 caps or fewer under their belts, some players earning their very first caps in these two matches, players like Casey Murphy and Ashley Hatch. But I got to say, I think within these two games, Lisa, there were players, specific players, who I think definitely are walking away from these two matches having made a little bit of a name for themselves. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there is so many positive things that came out of these two friendlies between the United States and Australia. Like you just mentioned, so many new players, younger players getting caps. You put names on Casey Murphy and Ashley Hatch, but Bethany Ballstar, Morgan Weaver, Ashley Sanchez, all of these players that now have experience with this team, with Vlatko Andonovski in game time experience, especially as you head into a year that is preparing for a World Cup. So that experience is everything. And you hear every coach say that and every player say that, but also in front of non-home crowds, very much Australian favored crowds, huge crowds at that are chanting and cheering and throwing a lot of adversity at these younger players that haven't even played with this team, and then being yelled at and screamed at by the fans, the Australian fans. So that was huge. But overall, just so many different positives that came away from this, because we saw all these younger players being thrown into these different situations and not just surviving, but handling them with so much poise and confidence and ease. I mean, we saw Ashley Hatch getting her first cap, first start, first goal in under 30 seconds. Okay, yeah, check mark. She's great. She's ready to go. Let's keep it going. Then she does it again in under 5 minutes in the second game. And I think that when you look at a player like Ashley Hatch, who, yes, scored a lot of goals in her club season with the Washington Spirit in the NWSL, but this is a whole different ballgame playing at the international level away after just 2 days of training before their first match against Australia. There's so many factors that go into it. And to have a player like Ashley Hatch be able to compartmentalize, separate that, say, I'm here to do a job, step on the field, and do exactly that. Her job is to score goals, and that's exactly what she does. I'm pretty pleased with how these games went. And I'm actually really pleased that there was a tie, because the United States team needs to face adversity and they need to face really tough teams that are hard to break down, that put a lot of pressure on offensively and force the United States defense to defend and be tough and be really smart. And we saw moments where the United States was broken down and where they didn't make the best plays, but that's exactly what these friendlies are for. So then you can go into training with Vlatko Andonovski and work on those things ahead of the World Cup. I just think that if we could have written a wish list of everything we wanted to get out of these friendlies, we would have checked off at least 90% of them.
Yeah, I'm not in disagreement with you on that. I do recall in our preview that we talked a little bit about, we kind of threw out the wish list concept again. We enjoy doing the wish list here on Attacking Third, players that we wanted to see get starts in either of these games, or at the very least see significant minutes, right, against this Matilda's side. And these type of games, we also talked about that in the preview, these type of games against Australia tend to be a lot of fun in that sense. There's two teams that really want to counter and break on transition and sort of hit you with their attack. So there's real opportunity sometimes for there to be big score lines, or like we saw with the second match, maybe a more narrow score line after all of the work. And that's sort of fun. I mean, the conscious that we could talk a little bit about the two games, sort of having the 3-0 score line in that first one, and then the 1-1 draw in that second match, where it was just sort of funny kind of looking at how that second match closed things out. And it sort of had this high octane energy where we thought, gosh, at one point I was watching these two teams very early in the morning in my 4 a.m. sleepiness, thinking, gosh, are we going to get like a wild 3-3 draw? And we got a draw, but it was a low and narrow draw, but not for lack of effort in terms of seeing the different looks in the attack. I think an important thing for us to maybe also sort of highlight within these two areas is that, yes, there were several players that were brought in that are sort of considered these next generation prospects, right, for the United States women's national team. But we weren't able to actually see them in some of these games. Katarina Macario with Olympique Lyon was nursing a little bit of an injury, and Vlatko Andonovski had said that he had possibly wanted to see her in a little bit of that nine false nine role. And I was, of course, we're all devastated to hear that that wasn't going to happen. We're like, sick, we're going to get to finally see this. And then it just happened. Sometimes that's soccer, right? Injuries come with the game. So she was unable to participate in this. And in fact, ahead of that second match against Australia, headed back to France to continue her rehabilitation there. And similar with Sophia Smith, a player that we thought had some really great looks during those September and October friendlies, on the assumption that we would probably maybe see her get a little bit of extra time with these teams, but similar scenario, having to work her way through some injury protocols there as well. And we were unable to see her in either of these, matches. But let's maybe hone in a little bit on some of the players that did stand out in either of these games.
Abby Dahlkamper, also another defender that has had a great NWSL season. She didn't get time dealing with a bit of injuries as well coming into this, which, it was interesting because only 18 players were rostered for each of these matches, which was surprising. You bring all these players in, and yes, injuries are different, and that's a whole different story to take on that, but to not even put them in the 18 that could potentially get time, I thought that was a little interesting. Belle Bigsby being one of them. Now, we do know that she was dealing with the loss of her father towards the end of the NWSL season, and I'm sure that that's not an easy thing to overcome and emotionally and mentally. She wasn't even in either of the 18s for either of these matches. But yes, Sandra, you're right. Let's dive into the 18 and specifically the many that we saw on the pitch getting significant minutes.
Well, you know, I know you and I have come on this show, and we have been high on Casey Murphy and her ability as goalkeeper and net. We're watching what she did with North Carolina Courage during the 2021 regular NWSL season. But, you know, we also took note that, you know, Jane Campbell was a player of the three goalkeepers had the most caps heading into these matches with a whopping 7, I believe it was. So not a ton, right? But when you're looking at, I guess, what's considered the experience, like she was the two senior national team level, was the more senior national team level experienced goalkeeper in that aspect. So I was thrilled when we got to see this first match and Casey Murphy got the start. But I was even more thrilled to see that she got a second consecutive start to close out this two-game series. A little bit of curiosity, I think, maybe in is whether or not that was planned, or perhaps maybe that was she earned that based on her shutout that she got in that first game. But I was delighted to see that she got not only time, but two full consecutive starts in this two-game series. And then she's walking away with a shutout in one of them. And almost nearly went, you know, we're talking 180 minutes of a shutout, but that deflected goal in the 80th minute from Kaya Simon for the Matilda sort of smashed that. But such an impressive showing from this goalkeeper, who's really back in the mix, I feel, after this couple of games, you know, and Casey Murphy making her return to this team after sort of getting some looks a little bit in 2018 and spending some time with the team in 2021, but not really getting time, you know, with She Believes in 2021. And now having gone through that long grind of a season, right, with NWSL, we're talking a long 10-month almost type season, and then getting the return and the call up back into the, and walking away with two starts. It was great. She was definitely one of my players who I think walked away with a bigger name for herself than she walked in with.
Casey Murphy definitely made a name for herself. I think she had 8 saves in the first game. So even if the plan wasn't to start her for the second match, how can you not? A player that's coming off so much momentum, so much confidence from that first match, getting the shutout and everything, I well deserved that she got the start in the second match. I also want to talk about the back line for Blacko and Danofsky, because there was only one change between the starting lineups between the first match and the second match, that being the outside back position. The first one, Emily Sonnet getting the start in the outside back position. Second game, it was Sofia Huerta, who saw time at the end of the first match. But otherwise, it was Emily Fox on the outside left, Tierna Davidson, Alana Cook, and then Sonnet, which then became Huerta in the second match. And this is really what I want to look at, because you and I both, for our wish list, had Becky Sauerbrunn starting in the back line, because having that little bit of veteran experience, we both put her there. She didn't get the start, which if we know Becky, and if anyone else knows Becky, she was so happy to be on the bench and be cheering on those younger players being on the field. But a player like Emily Fox, I think we saw what she is truly capable of, getting starts and minutes, and having the confidence in that position and the role that she was given to not only get up the flank and join in the attack, which she definitely did number of times, but also to have the freedom to kind of float around the field when she can, dribbling the ball laterally, horizontally across the field to open up those pockets, find those seams. She has incredible vision of the field to get around players and then to pick out passes and to find those holes to lay the ball off really, really well for forwards. So she usually skips the midfield line. And we've known this about Emily Fox. I'm not saying anything that's new. However, we saw in the second match specifically, Emily Fox had to do a lot of 1v1 defending. The Matildas really piled on the right side, Emily being on the left. So the Matildas going up their own right flank, doing overlaps, creating numbers up opportunities that created Australia a lot of chances that made them very, very dangerous. And I have to say, Emily Fox's 1v1 defending, I was very pleasantly surprised at how well she did. You could even see there were moments where she was getting tired. And that's where a player like Emily Fox, you could see her brain working harder when her body got tired. Because as defender, especially, you cannot take any plays off. I mean, anywhere on the field, you can't. But if your body is tired and you know you're not going to be able to sprint as fast as you could maybe in the first 20 minutes of the match, you're not going to expose yourself that much. So you can play a little bit smarter. You can make those passes quicker. You don't dribble as much on the ball. You let the ball do the work. And that's exactly what Emily Fox did. She didn't let her lack of energy affect her defensive efforts, especially in 1v1 defending. Maybe it affected her attacking abilities, but that's not what you want. That's exactly what you want from a defender. You want them to be able to defend perfectly. Another player in the back line that I was very, very pleasantly surprised and pleased with, Alana Cook. She's young. She definitely has some room to grow defensively. I think she did a fantastic job. Her vision of the field and her distribution out of the center back, that'll come. And that'll come with knowing her personnel up front and the players that are making those runs and where Ashley Hatch is going to make a run and which way Margaret Purse wants the ball placed into her, which is something that Becky Sauerbrunn does very, very, very well. So when comparing the two, yes, Becky Sauerbrunn is going to win out over Alana Cook. However, I think defensively, Alana Cook did a really nice job of holding it down in that center back position, and her distribution will come. So that's kind of my assessment the back line a little bit.
We love our defenders. So, of course, naturally, we didn't even plan it this way, Lisa, but we're talking about the players that stood out to us the most. And we're starting with goalkeepers and going to the back line. I love it so much. But I again, shocking. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. One of my favorite things to take note of during these few matches was some of the rotation that we saw in the back line in both of these games. And I'm in agreement with you with much of what you said about Emily Fox. And I do feel that she had a bit of a stronger game in the second match versus the first match, only sort of having that first half to go at and get an opportunity. But I think maybe that first match was more about just, you know, the fact that she kind of hadn't played in some time. Mm-hmm. You know, Louisville was eliminated from playoff contention for a very long time. There was about a whole month there or so where maybe she wasn't having that week-to-week sort of regimen. And sometimes with the travel and, you know, the short trainings, you need that time to find your legs under you. And I think she found them more in that second match. And there were moments where maybe it sort of felt like she was going too narrow, but maybe that was also part of because of some of the recoveries that she was having to do. There were moments where I was like 1v1, this almost sort of feels like 2v1 because these overlapping runs between Ellie Carpenter, Haley Rasso, Emily Fox had her work cut out to her. I mean, she punched the clock and put in a shift. So this 76 or so-ish minutes that we saw from Fox in the second game, I thought were even more impressive than they were from her first match. And I think the same can be echoed for somebody like a Sofia Huerta, who came in that first game as a second half substitute to sort of be this game changer, immediately wins the ball, right? Heads it to Purse, who lays it off for Lavelle for that goal. Just immediate impact, right, coming into the game, which is difficult to do if you're coming in cold like that. But that earned something like those type of performances, and her ability to read the game as well also got her the start in that second match. And it sort of felt like once the U.S. was starting to find Huerta, who was a little bit more open at times than Fox and in the open space on the opposite side, that it kind of opened things up a little bit more for the team. So I was very impressed with the outside back positions coming out of these two matches, which I think if you're Vlad Kalinowski and the coaching staff, you're like smiling from ear to ear, because one of the things surrounding this national team is, you know, what's going on with the outside back position and the depth or the lack thereof. And it just looks, coming out of these two games, like it actually expanded versus not having the answers for that. And I love that we're talking about Murphy. I love that we're talking about mm-hmm. Fox and Huerta. You know, for CBSSports.com, I put out, you know, five players who I thought specifically, you know, sort of raised their stock and boosted up their stock a little bit coming out of the national team camps. And for the national team specifically, and these three players were on it along with Ashley Hatch and along with Margaret Purse. So I guess now let's talk about maybe that front line a little bit, now that we've talked a little bit about players who have stood out to us, and we started in the back like we like to do. But this attacking presence for this team, right, we got to see some different looks, but we saw Margaret Purse and Ashley Hatch as two consistent factors in that. And then we got to see Rose Lavelle get pushed higher at some point. Yeah. And that was also just like, we're just having fun now, folks. That's just sort of what it felt like. Along also with Lynn Williams getting more time with this team. And I was happy to see that as well, because I feel like Lynn Williams really sort of is someone that we could sort of point to and look at and say, that is a Vlatko Andonovski prototypical attacking player. And I think leading up into the Tokyo Olympics, in the latter stages of preparing for that type of tournament, that maybe she fell off versus the form of some other player, like somebody like a Chris Impress, who was mm-hmm. just like outstanding, right? But has always been in the mix since Vlatko Andonovski has taken over the head coaching position of the United States women's national team. And she was chosen as an alternate to go, but then eventually was fully an Olympian based on the rules of the Tokyo Games this year. And we're continuing to see Vlatko Andonovski utilize Lynn Williams in this frontline role. So I loved seeing the different looks that all three of these players were able to sort of link up and combine with. And the fact that somebody like Margaret Pearce made her return into this national team camp after sustaining an injury midseason, getting left off of that Olympic roster, coming back with Gotham FC, making an impact, absolutely making a push, was in the mix for the Golden Boot race, became an MVP candidate in the NWSL 2021 season, and came back and got invited back into this national team camp as a forward, not a defender. So you know I was absolutely hyped to see this player get those consecutive starts in a frontline position. And it's not shocking, I think, to either of us, Lisa, that she walked away with two assists in two games.
No, I'm not shocked at all. I think to start with Margaret Pearce, yes, to see her getting the start is so, so well deserved. It would have been almost a letdown if she didn't. So great job, Blacko, on your side for that one. It really, she did. And she, her presence on both sides of the ball was very eminent. I think the way that we've touched on a little bit, but the tactics were a little bit different from Vladanovsky than we've seen in the past. And that forced players like Lynn Williams and Margaret Pearce as outside wings, 7 and 11s, wing back forward players to be more defensive when the United States didn't have the ball and really push in. It was almost like that center nine forward in Ashley Hatch most of the time was pressing high. And then it was the midfielder in Rose Lavelle coming out to be that second press, whereas Pearce and Williams were really pinched in doing defensive reading work, not just chasing the ball. And that's where I saw the smarts from Margaret Pearce shine, more so than I did from Lynn Williams. I'm going to be a little honest. I was a little disappointed in what I saw from Lynn Williams, specifically in the first match. Now, yes, she is very much a traditional Vlatko Andonovski player, and I'm sure she was doing her job correctly. But the way that Hatch and Pearce outshined Lynn Williams, I was a little disappointed. I wanted a little bit more from Lynn. I wanted her to be a little bit more hungry for the goals. I wanted her to be a little bit more consistent on her crosses into the box. And there were times when it kind of slipped off her foot the wrong way. And it was like, oh, whatever, it's fine, it'll happen. But those were the moments when I wanted Lynn to be the veteran in that front line, because that's what she is. She went to the Olympics and Hatch and Pearce didn't. So I wanted Lynn to kind of shoulder some of that burden of being like, this is how we do it. This is how we take control of the game as forwards. And this is how we defend. And I didn't really see that from her, especially in the first game. Second game, she definitely came into her own a little bit more. She had a little bit more time on the ball, a little more space to make the magic happen and do those fantastic Lynn Williams things that she does. That being said, I think, of course, Ashley Hatch with two goals, she did a fantastic job, but her work off the ball was really tremendous. The goal in the second game that Hatch had in the fourth minute or so, defensively, Hatch started that play. She did. She got her toe stuck in, and she was able to flick it onward for Lynn Williams, who had great vision to find Pearce on the far side. But then Hatch streaking down the field to get on the end of it and get the goal. So I think what I saw from Hatch was more exciting and more promising for the future than maybe what I saw from Lynn Williams. However, Lynn Williams has done it more consistently and more frequently, so we know she can do it. And maybe this was her chance to kind of play a different role in the lineup. But I love Hatch. I love Hatch as that high striker, not the false nine, which is what we would have seen if Kat Macario had slid into that role. She would have been almost a false nine, dropping back into the midfield a lot more, which is how we saw Carly Lloyd play that position. So I think with Kat Macario being out with that groin injury, it was a blessing in disguise for Ashley Hatch, of course, who then earned the start in the first game that got her the goal, that most likely earned her the start in the second game as well. And we also saw different tactics from Vlatko Andonovski, because now you have a player that wants to run in Ashley Hatch and be that nine, wants to press forward every time the ball is played over the top, and also wants to press. She wants to chase the ball around and chase the center backs down and pick up the ball, which allows you to press differently with the high nines and the seven, the 11s. pinched in and then with your number 10 attacking midfielder pressing forward. So blessing in disguise all over the pitch for them. And that really rounds out our front line, honestly, with what we saw. And when Weaver joining in there, I think that we have to touch on her. I mean, what did you think of Weaver getting minutes in these matches?
I think that Vlad Wondanowski trying to utilize her in sort of those late game scenarios are perhaps going to be the beginning stages of how maybe we see somebody like a Morgan Weaver utilized for the national team. There has frequently been that type of game-changing forward that you want to have on your roster that you can bring in that could just sort of run down and run at a back line. I think we saw that a little bit when we saw the rise of Jessica McDonald making, coming off of really strong NWSL seasons and then making a push in with the national team and then ultimately heading off to the World Cup as part of that larger 23 squad in 2019. So I think that, you know, the season is very high for somebody like a Morgan Weaver. And I think for now, sort of seeing her in these limited minutes, that perhaps maybe the coaching staff could be looking at this type of player, maybe a similar capacity. But there were, I mean, a ton of players actually getting those extended minutes or looks in these caps or in these games with few caps under their belts. Murphy, Hatch, Ashley Sanchez, Bethany Balser, you know, all players walking away with their first ever national team camps in this game. And in terms of, you know, Alana Cook, you know, getting, you know, building on her minutes as well. But I guess looking at like what's considered so funny to think about this, but like looking at what's considered like the quote unquote experienced players on this roster, somebody like in this case, it was a Rose Lavelle, right? You know, with 66 caps or Lindsay Horan with 106 caps, you know, or it's funny to even think about this, but like a Tierna Davidson being the experienced center back, starting center back in both of these games with 40 something caps under her belt. But you know, I think with these two games, there was a lot there to look at and say there's a lot of promising things here, but there are still things that all these players are going to look at and take at and want to take home and work on. I think Lindsay Horan, including her, like someone who has the only player on this one next to Becky Sauerbrunn who had over 100 caps, is probably looking at that second game and saying, you know what, I had a better first game, but I didn't have such a great second game.
Yeah.
She's the type of player that has really kind of become essential for this team in terms of what she does in spaces, you know, for the national team and also her club team. But we sort of saw her, you know, making some interesting choices, right? Some interesting first choices and maybe not so great second choices, you know, out on the pitch in that second match. And then Rose Lavelle, like getting to see her in like a little bit of a higher position, you know, and watching her tactical prowess on the ball was a delight. And you know, again, even seeing somebody like Tierna Davidson kind of being that more experienced kind of center, more organized type of center back in these two matches, I think also was an opportunity for a player like her, that even though she is considered part of this next generation, this next wave of United States women's senior national team players, that being given that opportunity, put out there and saying, hey, you're actually going to be the leading center back in this one, the one that's actually going to try to make sure that you're keeping everything good. That's an opportunity for a young player like that. And I think that she did very well in this one. So I loved these two series. I thought it was a great way to close out the 2021 year for this national team. And I'm glad that we had these two extra matches to talk about, Lisa, because we weren't too sure if that was going to be it for this national team this year.
I know. I'm so glad that we had them. And Sandra, I want to throw you on the spot, ask you some questions about this and what you said. You mentioned Morgan Weaver being that player that comes in towards the end of the game to run and to be that player that puts a lot of pressure on opponents, which is exactly what she did. And it worked really well. Now, when you look at the history of the roster of this U.S. Women's National Team, let's throw in a Tobin Heath, an Alex Morgan, a Kristen Press, even into that lineup. Does that role almost switch to an Ashley Hatch instead of getting the start with those things? Like how does that fit in to the puzzle of all of the players that are available for the U.S.?
Yeah, I think that's a strong possibility. Look, the 2023 World Cup is going to be here sooner than we think. It's literally going to be 2022 in a few weeks, right? So the preparation of window for that World Cup is not as long as people think it's going to be. And that's why these two friendlies, this experience of getting these type of players together to travel and have the experience of being confined together and going overseas to what is going to be a World Cup host country was very, very important. And Vlad Kwandanowski had said that he had already had conversations with a number of players in this particular camp about their progression to that January camp. So we are likely going to see a number of players who had an impact in these Australia friendlies in that same January camp. Just because he was the type of coach, he said, I don't want them thinking that this is the end all be all for them. So I had those conversations with them already about inviting them into January camps. And those tend to be camps that are, again, much larger. And we'll, I'm sure, have an episode about that when the time comes. But they tend to be much, much larger, like 30 something odd, you know, players. And there's a little bit of a different energy around those types of camps. But I would say that, to just sort of hone in more a little bit on your question, that I think with the preparation of this and somebody like Hatch maybe filling that role, I think that is a likely possibility. I think that when you get closer to these international tournaments, history has shown us, and I said this when we were talking about the Olympics, history has shown us that the head coaches of these teams have typically relied on the experience of their players. So if you are telling me, if you are asking me, they're like, oh, like, do we think that this forward core is going to be like Lynn Williams and Hatch and Peirce moving forward? No, I do not think it is. I do believe they are going to be in the mix in some type of way. But what I would love to see, based off of the two games that we've just seen, I would love to see more time in the front line with Margaret Peirce. What does that front line look like with a Kristen Press, with a Margaret Peirce, with a Lynn Williams, with even a Sophia
Smith?
With MLP, we don't know yet. We don't know. And hopefully we'll find out. So
maybe even Trinity Rodman thrown into that mix. I mean, the possibilities are endless, Sandra.
We're gonna find out. I would love to see it. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm excited. I think this was a delightful way to close out the calendar year for the United States Women's National Team. And we'll likely open up our calendar year on Attacking Third, talking about national team camps once again. But for now, we want to thank everybody for listening. As always, we hope you enjoyed our discussions and recaps of these two matches. We want to thank you all for listening. Another reminder to follow us on Twitter at Attacking Third. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere you listen to your podcast shows. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with a question, Lisa and I will answer it during our mailbag segment. And we're also available as video. So please subscribe to us on YouTube. Visit youtube.com/attackingthird for extended NWSL highlights and more. Lisa and I will be back with more off-season news for everybody to enjoy. It is officially off-season in the NWSL and it is active. So we will have more for you soon. For Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman, this was Attacking Third.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.